Okay, Brian Kurtz, the first question I got to ask you is, what is up with the Pulp Fiction poster behind you?
Well, the funny thing about the Pulp Fiction poster, well, first of all, it's one of the best written movies.
Agreed.
And I think the way Tarantino writes sometimes gets overlooked because there's all this blood. And so I think that, the way he intersperses the present and the past and in that movie is one of the more intelligent ways of doing that I've ever seen in a movie. And I mean, we've had movies before where there are flashbacks and you come up to the present and you go back. And in fact, I just watched the whole Godfather epic from beginning to end, where they put everything in chronological order, and it wasn't as interesting.
That's fascinating. You're the second person I've talked to this week who told me they just watched the Godfather saga.
Yeah, because it's been running on one of the cable stations. But it's basically they do the flashbacks from Godfather 2 at the beginning with Vito Corleone, and Clemenza, played by Bruno Kirby, as youngsters. Whereas that's how the movie starts. The epic movie starts because it's the earliest chronological. But in the real movie, the way it's done is flashbacks in Godfather 2, it actually takes away from the Godfather 2 portion of the epic. So I'm saying I think flashbacks can be misused, but I think, when we talk in copy about pattern interrupts and about keeping people's attention and when you go back and when you come forward, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time in Pulp Fiction, not knowing what reality I was in. Plus, people are getting shot up all over the place. So it's, it's got that aspect.
Keeps your attention.
Tarantino is an amazing writer.
Yeah,
amazing writer.
Agreed. Have you watched, this is really out of left field, but have you watched Boardwalk Empire?
I did not. And I've heard good things. Buscemi is in that, right?
Yes, I'm on the last season, so I'm almost done with it. And the writing is, there's lots of blood and sex and all kinds of things your mama told you not to watch. And she was right.
Right.
But it's so well written. I just couldn't stop. I've been mesmerized by the writing. It's so brilliant.
Yeah, you know what? I think people like us, and you more than me, because you're much more a practicing copywriter than I've been, but I think we really recognize the fabric of what we're watching all the time. And, when I watch the Academy Awards, I always can call the screenplay awards.
Yeah.
Both the adapted and the original. I always know when a writer is doing an amazing job. I guess that would be my superpower. My superpower is not copywriting, but understanding what a great piece of writing looks like, both in promotion, a movie. I was an English major, so I love to write. I love writing my blog. I don't want to do video for my blog. People say I have a face for radio anyway. So
that's not true. You have a great face for video as well.
But I've been reluctant to do video in my blog, because most of our buddies are doing more video blogs. The writing is harder, but I really want to do it. It's a craft that I just love, and I love expressing myself in writing much more than I do, although I love being here with you today in video. I love expressing myself in writing, and I always said I was a copywriter wannabe, but.
Well, but I think you write great copy, and we've had this discussion before where you say you're not a great copywriter, and I say you're a very good copywriter, and I won't argue with you about that this time, but I will say that what's interesting is writing is harder than doing video, I think.
And I think it's much harder.
A lot of people would contest that, but I think writing is really, writing in general, is the most generous act you can perform for other human beings, because really, you're not getting paid to do it. Even if you get, as a copywriter, you get a fee up front, you're really counting on the payment on the back end. That's your real pay. The fee up front is just to pay for your time.
That's right.
So you're writing always, I believe, you're always writing on spec, even if you're Stephen King. There's no guarantee that his next novel is going to be a bestseller.
That's right. That's right. Every great copywriter I ever worked with who was a royalty writer, they had a number in mind when they wrote the original package of how much they expected to make from this package, and it had nothing to do with the upfront fee. Now, when Gary Bensavenga and Jim Rutz were starting out, they would, work on spec because they wouldn't charge you an upfront, because they were so confident no one would beat them that they would get the royalty and keep the control for a very long time. That was a different world. Once the demand for their time became so high, they had to charge $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a package. But even then, as you suggest, it was really that I'm not going to take on this project if I don't think I can make $200,000 or $300,000 minimum, much less, you know, that would be the low end. And that had nothing to do with the 50 that they got up front.
Well, and you know, what's interesting to me is I never really was part of that world of writing for the big publishers and writing for royalties. I got started as a freelance copywriter. You know, like I got John Carlton's course and I was like, and I read Bob Bly's book and I was like, oh, I can do this. And I got to the point where I could charge really big fees, but I stopped writing for clients because I realized that's not where the money in the game is. And I just never really broke into that world. So now I make my own products and I occasionally partner with somebody where I'm getting part of the company or part of the, you know, we have a profits agreement or something like that, which I think is an area of interest that you have.
Yeah, it is.
We can talk about that later.
But I will say this. I think a lot of copywriters, I'm not just saying this because you're a host, yes, but that there are people that are envious of sorts, or at least look at you and admire your model, who are great copywriters because they were always working on someone else's whim. They were, it was almost like, you know, they were almost an employee of that company who assigned them a package. Whereas you took responsibility for your life, for your own actions, and by creating your own products. I know a couple of copywriters, I won't mention names, some of the best who've ever lived, that lament to this day that they never developed their own product.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the question I always have for especially the really great copywriters who never did that, is I always wonder, well, why didn't you do that? And it took me a while to figure out the gifting of writing great copy does not always go together with the gifting of being a great entrepreneur.
That is correct.
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. I think most of the time it doesn't. So there's great examples of people that we both know and love and respect. Some of them, God rest their souls, have gone on to the next life, who were great at writing copy, great at generating millions of dollars, and couldn't seem to hang on to any of it.
Couldn't hang on to it. And then, and I love what you just said about entrepreneur. You know, that they weren't really great entrepreneurs. They weren't really good business people. I mean,
yes,
they couldn't hold on to the money because of that too. But what I mean by that is that they didn't play well with others. So they didn't want to have a staff. They didn't want to manage people. And I'm not throwing all my copywriters under the bus. I mean, literally, and this will sound really cliche, some of my best friends are copywriters, but they are.
Really?
I mean, I consider you a great friend. And, you know, people like Paris Lampropoulos and David Deutsch are, you know, two of my best friends in the world. But you know, do they really want to run a company? Well, and in fact, they're the ones that told me when I thought about someday, you know, owning Boardroom completely, they're the ones that told me, among others, that said, do you really want to do that? Do you really want that ball and chain of a company around? And I never didn't get the chance to buy it, but maybe that was the blessing in disguise for me. I don't know, but you know, interesting.
Well, and it's also, you said something that was intriguing, and you said some of them just weren't great business people. Being a great business person is different from being an entrepreneur. Those are two very different people.
They are.
Because there's many great entrepreneurs who are terrible business people.
Yes. And I think that I know a bunch of copywriters that would be bad entrepreneurs and bad business people.
Yes. Yes.
yeah, as you said, the craft doesn't go with it. But then you look at a guy like Gary Bensavenga or Gene Schwartz, for example. You know, they understood that it was really cool writing for other people and making millions of dollars as a copywriter, although Gene used to exchange names for copy, which I'll tell you that story if you like.
I would like to hear that story, but while I'm thinking of it, I got to put a pin in that for just a moment. Bensavenga, not returning my emails, not returning my calls, want to get him on this series. So if you can drop a dime on my behalf, I'll let him talk about his olive oil.
Yeah, no, he's very reluctant to be in this world anymore. Not because he's arrogant or negative. Anybody who knows Gary knows.
Oh, he's the furthest from that.
Furthest from that. I think it's just, you know, he really wanted to retire from, you know, when he did the Bensavenga 100, it was, let me get out of this business. I'm going to go out on a high note. But he only came to Titans. That was an exception. It really was. And he came to me on that. He made me cry the day he told me he'd speak for us at Titans. But yeah, he's going to be a tough get, Ray. I'll ask him, but he'll be a tough get.
You know what? You just reminded me of this scene from a movie. Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, Gary, if you don't agree to come on the series, but if you do hear this, know that I love and respect you. And one of the highlights of my career was actually getting to meet Gary at Titans at the event you put on, which we'll talk more about that later, too. So let's go.
I want to just juxtapose quickly.
Yes.
So Pulp Fiction there. It's a Wonderful Life there.
Now that is a juxtaposition.
Now is that a juxtaposition with Marianne?
Wait, go back to It's a Wonderful Life.
My face
I see
is on
why.
Jimmy Stewart. Yeah.
Featuring Brian Kurtz.
Correct. So that was given to me at an award ceremony because they knew it was my favorite movie and they put my face on Jimmy Stewart's face.
Oh.
But the interesting thing about, you know, that film, you know, to juxtapose that with Pulp Fiction, not as bloody as Pulp Fiction.
No, not by a long stretch.
Bloody in a different way. You know, bloody in that if you take it to heart and realize what the world might be like without you in it, is probably the best lesson I learned at a very, very young age.
You know what's interesting is that I saw a survey recently that is the number one most favorite movie of guys of a certain age. Not women, guys of a certain age. I don't know what that says.
I believe it. You know, there's a lot of George Bailey and a lot of people, you know, in my generation, I know for a fact. In fact, I did my senior thesis in college all about Frank Capra and his films as they pertain to literature of the 1920s. So it was kind of an interesting.
I did not know this about you. Things you learn. Yeah.
I was a big film guy. I was the film critic for my school newspaper in college, and I thought I was going to be a film critic at one point. But I don't know. Direct marketing was such a lure. I don't know.
So now I said put a pin in something, and I completely forgot what it was. What were we going to talk about?
Well, I was talking about Ben Savenga and Schwartz, and just saying
exchanging names.
I didn't want to lose that. Yeah, good.
Recall.
We're going to close that loop for a second.
Oh yeah,
but. But, you know, Gary, you know, had a resume business called Accountable Advertising while he was writing for other people. And then he has the olive oil business now. So he always knew that, you know, it was a business that would have his stamp on it while he was working for others. And Gene Schwartz, you know, had this cool little company called Instant Improvement, which were these small little health books. Great copy. I mean, anybody remembers How to Rub Your Stomach Away and The Tao of Sexology and...
Dude, I got to tell you.
He was incredible.
When I was a kid, I think I told you this story before. I didn't even know I was reading ads. My grandmother used to get the National Enquirer and the Weekly World News. And the ads for those books from Instant Improvement would be in there'd be like a full page spread in those.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought they were stories. I thought they were articles when I was a kid. I would read them and I would tear them out and keep them because I thought the secrets of the universe are in here.
Right.
And only as I grew up and I got interested in copywriting, did I figure out, wait a minute, these are ads written. I've seen these before because I'm reading, you know, books about copy and they're showing the classic Gene Schwartz ads. And I'm like, these were ads. I was reading ads.
Well, and then you got internet guys today. And now I sound like grandpa, I know, but the internet kids say they invented
lawn.
Internet kids say they invented native advertising. Yeah. It's like, Ray, we were writing advertorials when they were just little kids.
Come on. Get real.
You know what? Before I don't want to forget this story because I think this is one that none of your guests will be able to tell, and I think it's a brilliant one because you talk a lot about in your interviews and when you talk about aha moments. And one of the big aha moments I had in my career because I came out of the list business. You know, I was a list guy who fell in love with all aspects of direct marketing, but I always knew that the list was the most important. You know, 40, 40, 20, list 40%, offer 40%, creative 20. Now that's not to put down creative's importance, as we both know.
But if you don't have those other two, you got nothing.
You got nothing. And you could actually, what's happened on the internet, of course, and now I sound like grandpa again, is that you put mediocre creative against a list that's perfect and you're going to make some money.
Yep.
Because their cost is so low. But if you take perfect creative written by Ray Edwards or written by Gene Schwartz, I don't care who it is, and you put it against a list that's not targeted with a terrible offer, you get zero, zero.
Yep.
Now, the story I want to tell about Gene, though, which is incredible, which is the amazing aha moment about the 40-40-20, as it pertains to maybe one of the best copywriters who ever lived and certainly the author of the most important book ever written on the subject called Breakthrough Advertising, I know it's there. Yes, my version too. I'm reprinting it. I'm hopefully have the rights to it for the next 15 years.
This I tell people: if you only ever get one book, it shouldn't even be my book. My book should be the second book you get, but this is the first book.
Right, go ahead. First three chapters, I think, If you absorb the first three chapters of that book, I'm not saying anybody can be a copywriter, but you got a great first step. So anyway, what Gene did is that he wrote copy for us at Boardroom. There's another story about how he became my mentor or a mentor, but he was a real student of direct response. And what he realized is that he realized, even though copy was the most important thing to him and the thing that he did best, he knew the importance of the list, and that without a list to mail, he had nothing. So he was writing copy for some big mailers like Boardroom and Rodale Press and Phillips Publishing at the time. And what Gene would do is that, I mean, he could have commanded as high a fee as anybody at the time. We're talking, you know, not at this point. And he could have commanded, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 for a package plus royalties. And with Boardroom and with Rodale in particular, I don't know if he did this with Phillips or not, but with Boardroom and Rodale, he knew that for his company, Instant Improvement, which was also a health publisher, Boardroom published health books, Rodale published health books. We had the two biggest health book buyer lists on the market by far. His little company, Instant Improvement, had a very tiny list, and he had these little tiny books with great copy. And he said, how could I, you know, I can't afford to spend a couple hundred bucks, a thousand, you know, in the mail on Rodale names and Boardroom names. So here's what I'll do, Boardroom. I'll make a deal with you and Marty. He came to us and said, for a full package for your book at Boardroom, I want 750,000 names from the Boardroom database any way I want to select them. And of course, Brian, you're going to select them for me.
Because you're the list guy.
I knew our list better than anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, that's how I became like a real confidant of Gene's on the list side, not only selecting the Boardroom list, then I gave him all the advice about all the other lists that I was using for my products, because I was a list guy. I wasn't the copy guy. And in exchange for that, Gene invited me to his house to have lunch with him and spend time with him and teach me, you know, not to be a great copywriter, but to really understand the nuances of copywriting. But the aha moment was if maybe the greatest copywriter who ever lived, or one of the top five who ever lived, was so obsessed with lists and so obsessed with list selection and how important that was for his own business and for the businesses of his clients. That was like one of the first questions I would always ask a copywriter. Like, I would be suspicious if a copywriter came to me who wanted to write for me and they didn't ask me for a list history of the product they were writing for and to understand the selects that I had taken in the past and all the things that I did in the list selection for the product that they were going to write for. If they didn't ask me that question, it was like a big red flag for me, because a copywriter that doesn't understand who they're writing for isn't really a copywriter that's going to be, you know, world class, in my opinion.
Well, and your opinion is correct, I believe. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Then I'm feeling a lot better about my opinion now.
I'm so jealous that you knew Gene and you spent time with him and you were a confidant. I mean, in many ways, I feel like I came to this game just a little too late. It's like with the Beatles. I feel like I just missed it.
I missed the Beatles with you too, for the most part. Although, I mean, I never met the Beatles, but you know.
Nor did I. But I have their songs on my iPhone. So
I have all of their songs on my iPhone too. But Gene was he was a mountain of a man. He really was, and a real gentleman. And an interesting thing about Gene is that if you read his obituary, they talk more about his art collecting than they do his copywriting prowess.
That is interesting. It's what I was talking with Bob Bly a couple of days ago about Gene and about other guys of his ilk, you know, people in that realm, John Caples and Claude Hopkins, you know, the gang, the usual
they're
suspects.
They're all in my book. Those are the profiles in my new book.
Your new book.
Yeah. I got a book coming out.
Well done. What's it called?
I don't like the title very much. It's called The Advertising Solution. I got to the project a little late. It's with Craig Simpson, who wrote The Direct Mail Solution with Dan Kennedy. And he came to me when he had a lot of the book written and said, I want to do a book called The Advertising Solution. And we're going to profile six legends of advertising, or at least not direct marketing wasn't even a term in 1923 when Claude Hopkins wrote Scientific Advertising.
Right.
But we're going to profile these six people and these six men, and we're going to see all of the eternal truths, as Perry Marshall would say, all of the eternal truths that they talked about in all of their writings and everything that they did, not only apply today, but if marketers today could use a lot of this information to probably do a lot better work on the creative and the testing that they do online. So the six are David Ogilvy, John Caples, Claude Hopkins, Robert Collier, Gary Halbert, and Gene Schwartz.
Wow. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to read that book.
It's a fun book. You've read all of them, so there won't be a lot of maybe big new ahas for you.
But I love reading the stories about the adventures, the exploits of these guys, and the way they thought, the way they lived, the way they wrote. And any chance, do you have any input? Can the title change at all?
No, by the time I got there, see, it's published by Entrepreneur Press.
Oh, okay. I got
you. And to their audience, advertising's a better word than marketing.
Oh, it's the advertising cure. That's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah, it's advertising cure would be pretty good too. But it was Solution because it was his first book was Direct Mail Solution.
Just reminds me of Nazis. That's all
I know,
I'm
me too. I don't like it at all. But
you know what? Just erase all that. Forget all that because you contributed to writing this book and it's going to be fantastic. Did you write the whole thing or did Craig write part of it? Or
Craig kind of did all the heavy lifting in terms of pulling all the stuff from the books from the guys. And then I edited all 10 chapters. I added a lot of the side stuff. I added most of the stuff. You know, Craig wasn't making he didn't want to. He couldn't make the connections between them then and now as much, even though Craig is very active now as well. But I was able, because of my association with a lot of the best online marketers in the world. You and I are both in a mastermind group together with many of them. And so I was able to make those connections and I was able to kind of tell a few stories, certainly about Gene, that helped. One of the things that the book will do too, which is very interesting and for your copywriting audience especially, is that like Collier, the book, you know, the letter book by Robert Collier, it's a bit of a snooze.
I warn people. I tell them you should read it. It's great, but be prepared. It's heavy lifting.
It's heavy lifting. So I think that what's good about the book that Craig and I did, it probably enables a lot of people to take a bit of a shortcut on Collier. Now, Caples is also tough because Caples, it's hard to get the fourth edition of Tested Advertising Methods. It's the fifth edition now, which was rewritten by this guy. I forget the guy's name. And apparently everybody is like saying it's not the same book. We worked off the fourth edition. So again, I think that we're going to be able to share stuff that's not as easily gettable. As far as Gene, I got a lot of stuff about Gene personally. You know, Halbert, we pulled a lot of stuff, you know, from the Gary Halbert letters, and people aren't quite studying him enough because he hasn't been gone as long and he was more of a contemporary of us.
Yeah. Then, isn't that weird though? I mean, it's like you haven't been dead long enough for us to respect you yet.
It's kind of weird.
It's very strange because Gary he is the penultimate, I think, example of the genius copywriter. And you, by the way, you are the perfect guy to do what you have done with this book. You are, in my mind, you are the connect the dots guy. Adding those grace notes and bringing all those connections together. Yeah. I seriously cannot wait to read this book. That's fantastic.
Well, it's like you kind of hit on the head, like what, you know, what my mission is for this, you know, second half of my career. I mean, the first 34 years was the first half. And now I got another 34 to figure out, you know, how I'm going to take everything I learn and bring it forward, which I think is a lot of what you're doing too. I mean, you know, working with Don Miller and doing a lot of the stuff that you're doing, you're taking all of that knowledge that you've accumulated, and there aren't that many of us connect the dots guys. And there aren't that many of, and I'm definitely saying it's an us here. Even though I think I'm a little older than you. But I think that when I say connect, it's not just connect the dots, but it's also like this bridge, right? Because most of the people who I grew up with in the traditional direct marketing world in the 80s and 90s, they've given up. The internet came along and it was like, whoa, this is crazy. I don't know what to do. All I know is direct mail. Now, people have pigeonholed me as the direct mail guy. But frankly, I know I'm not that guy, although I love direct mail still and direct mail is not dead. But my thing is I didn't give up. I saw the internet as the ultimate direct marketing medium, the ultimate direct marketing medium.
Yes, people who think of you as just the direct mail guy underestimate you to their disadvantage.
Thank you.
Yes.
But you know what's happening though, Ray? It's kind of fun though, because I've got a couple of very large internet marketing success story companies that are coming to me who have physical product, who want to develop a direct mail campaign. And this is super exciting to me, what I call O to O to O, which is online to offline to online. And to me, this would be the, this is the killer. This, to me, this would be the killer thing. Because if you could go from an online type product, digital, create the physical product, then create direct mail, go out to a completely different audience that's not going to overlap as much as people think, the lifetime value of the people who are going to originate in direct mail are going to be so much higher.
Yeah.
And because these people are so adept at the online, you imagine you take a, can get that offline person from direct mail into the online funnel, not immediately because they're going to want to respond through direct mail, but then you get their email address, you give them some digital content, you get them into the online funnel. Now you've got all the economics of online and email marketing with the potential lifetime value of an initial engagement in direct mail. I mean, I sound like a mad scientist, and I don't know if I'm going to make this happen, but I need a, I'm working really hard to get a couple of really big time case histories. And I can't talk about the one yet, but it's going to be, it's a big one. I mean, this is a company that has done, I think two eight-figure launches online with digital content.
Wow.
And they want to do direct mail. And I said, I'm not making a promise. They're willing to put the budget against it. I said, we're either going to make history or you're going to fire me as the worst consultant you ever had.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to fire you. I think you're going to make history.
Well, I'll find them some good copywriters. So that'll help, right?
Yes. If you can find people good copywriters, that is the magic right now that everybody wants is how do I find a good copywriter?
Amazing. You know, I wrote a blog post just recently that, you know, a week or two doesn't go by where someone's calling me, and I know a lot of people who are listening here are copywriters, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Watching here. So, you know, a week or 2 weeks don't go by, Brian, can you find me a good copywriter? And the more I get asked that question, the more repulsed I get, because by repulsed, I mean it's the wrong question, you know? And the thing that I'm really obsessed about on the copywriting front, now you know where I'm obsessed on the marketing front, it's this O to O to O, and it's the list stuff and all that stuff. But on the copywriting front, it's that I really want to know where's that next generation of Ray Edwards, Gary Bensavenga, you know, Gene Schwartz, even David Deutsch, Paris Lampropoulos. Where's the next generation of these great copywriters going to come from? And again, I'm in the perfect position, I think, to be the man on the more than the man on the lookout, but the man that's going to be able to start pairing up the right clients with the right writers, not as a headhunting service, but because a copywriter, one of the biggest mistakes I see in copywriting today is trying to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
And the best copywriters I know have they initially carved out a niche for themselves, became so good at one thing, mastered it, and then branched out. And that's true in almost anything, right? I mean, you can make that case for marketers as well. You can make that case for, you know, dentists, whatever. You know, you want to master that one thing. And so what I'm finding is that, you know, with my buddy Kevin Rogers, who's got a great thing called Copy Chief, where it's a membership for up-and-coming copywriters, and we together are now on this sort of quest for figuring out how we're going to get copywriters to realize that, and they are realizing it, that the old paradigm is really disrupted in terms of being a hired gun, going client to client to client, thinking they're all going to pay you royalties and you're going to go retire to the south of France. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Nope.
The internet's too fast. You know, you're going to get new controls by the, you know, it used to be you could have a control for 3 years, or the Wall Street Journal was what, 18 years or whatever it was. But on the internet, you have a control for what, 15 minutes? So you're not going to be able to get royalties unless you're like constantly doing your own revising, which Gary Bensavenga used to do. And so my thing is, why not, you know, it's sort of counter to being a freelance copywriter, but why not take the deep dive with the one client, with the one category just become the person, the guy or gal in that area. And that's kind of where I've been going with a lot of the blog posts I've been writing, with a lot of the stuff that I've been doing. And I think we're going to culminate it with Kevin and I are going to do a live event next February, where, you know, it'll be sort of like the next $1 million copywriter. It's not going to happen the same way as it used to.
Who wants to be the next $1 million copywriter?
Exactly. So I'm pretty obsessed with this thing because I think, you know, this, despite the fact that I still believe it's a 20-40-40-20 with creative being the 20, to not pay attention big time to creative and to the stuff that you teach and story and really creating messaging to specific list segments, I think is just a huge error on the part of most marketers that I meet today.
Well, agreed. And there's a couple things I want to touch on, and then I've got a big question I want to ask you. The first thing is I want to go back to, I was having this conversation with Bob Bly. We were talking about Eugene Schwartz, and I started naming off the greats, the classic guys of copywriting, basically the guys who are in your book. That's so funny that you have written this book about these guys we were talking about. And I said to Bob, you know, I find that a lot of people that I encounter in the copywriting world today, I mean, copywriters who are actually good at what they do, who actually get paid money to write copy, I would consider them professionals. They don't even know who these guys are.
Wow.
And Bob, you know, Bob said that he said that he surveys people when he's speaking, and he'll, one of the questions he'll ask is, who in here knows who Eugene Schwartz is? And he said, Ray, do you know the percentage of people that raise their hand when I ask that question? Usually? And I said, I don't know. I'm afraid to. He said,
I'm afraid to guess.
Zero.
Really?
He said, it's often zero. So my one word I would have for copywriters, even if you've been at it for a while and you're making money and you're good, if you don't know these names and if you haven't read the original books that they wrote, get Brian's book. That'll be a good start for you. The Advertising Solution. And then go back and read the originals. But now let's circle back to...
I just say one other thing on that? Because you made me think of something else.
Yes.
Also swipe files. I think that they're also underutilized, underestimated. Now, you were at my Titans event, and you saw what I gave away there. I gave away the two binders, which had the 30 best packages Boardroom ever did. And, you know, talk about people who didn't know who Gene Schwartz was, right? There are two of those.
Yes.
And what the interesting thing was is that there were people complaining, like, how could you bog me down with all this stuff? And I'm like, all right, you want to complain? I think I made a joke on stage about it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that the beauty of it, just the other day, I actually went to one of the packages that David Deutsch wrote for an estate planning book that I did for Boardroom. It was like what
every
your
lawyer woman
never told you your wife should know about your
yes,
will.
Yes, I was just looking at that package a few days ago. That's so strange.
Yeah, and you could like fill in the blank. It's sort of like John Benson's, you know, generator thing where you could fill in the blanks. I'm not saying you should do copywriting by filling the blanks, but go to some great headlines. You know, there's somebody that we both know in the internet world that once did a blog post and the subject line was, do you make these mistakes in internet marketing? Now, that's based on a Maxwell Sackheim ad from like 1923. Do you make these mistakes in English, I believe, for a language program?
Yes.
And I'm not saying you should do like fill in the blank copy, but man, just the concepts, the platforms, the way people were thinking, whether it was Gene Schwartz or whether it was Gary Bensavenga, and see how they crafted a message and the inspiration that you get. Almost every copywriter, great copywriter I've ever worked with and that I've ever met has a huge swipe file. Not just the books they've read, but they save. I just cleaned out two big boxes. Jim Rutz, who's one of the great copywriters of all time.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't talk about Jim. His sister, after he passed away, sent me two huge boxes of his entire swipe file. I just went through them. I've got three young copywriters who are going to help me put together a product that's going to be called The Lost Files of Jim Rutz.
I'll be first in line.
That's going to be a killer product.
I met Jim at a Jeff Walker event where I was actually speaking, and somebody told me, they said, do you know, it was Todd Brown. He said, do you know who that guy is? Back in the back of the room, I said, no. He said, that's Jim Rutz. And I'm like, you're kidding me. Nobody was talking to him. He was kind of a wallflower. And I stuck to that guy like glue for the rest of the conference because I was just trying to suck his brain dry because he's such a fantastic...
He's a strange man.
And very odd. Quirky.
Very odd.
I would describe him as quirky.
Quirky, yeah.
And we became good friends, and we talked a lot, and we emailed a lot, and I was so sad when I learned that he passed. But I'm so glad you're doing that, because there's a legacy of work that guy created that needs to be shared with people.
And you know, he started a church on his own. I mean, you know how hard that is?
Yeah.
You know, Marty and I helped him finance some stuff, and Marty and I are both Jewish. And, you know, it was a Christian church, and it just the guy was all mission-oriented.
Yes.
Never could hold on to his money because he was but you know, he commanded the highest royalties. He and Ben Cervenka get credit for being of the Magellan. And one thing about Rutz that's interesting is that Paris Anthropoulos told me this, and a few other writers have agreed, said that he's the hardest copywriter to emulate because he wrote with such a quirky style. He actually was able to get away with humor where other writers couldn't. And that's worth studying alone, because to see how he got away with something that everybody in copywriting school says you can't do, I think is got to be something worthwhile. So I've told these three young copywriters, we need to get some lessons in here. I did find his designer who worked on most of the stuff that I work on with Jim. His name is Don Pierce, who's still alive. And so Don is going to get involved in the project as well. And he may remember some other quirky stuff about Jim. But I wrote a blog post, which, you know, if you ever want to share it with your tribe, I would gladly give it to you to just send to them. It's called The Copywriter Closest to God. And
great blog post. I would love to share that with my tribe. That is a fantastic piece.
Thank you. And then it was the longest blog post I ever wrote. There was so much to talk about. I mean, talk about swipe files. I have the two boxes, which now, you know, I'm distributing to these three copywriters to work on the project. But the reason why I think I said something in the blog post that Jim replaced furniture with swipe files. So you'd go to his house and there'd be the Rodale pile and the Boardroom pile and the Phillips Publishing pile and the Agora pile. So he was studying everybody. And then going out and doing his own thing at a completely different level than anybody. I just, you know, one of the most interesting men I've ever met in my life. And again, you know, a copywriter that, you know, fewer people than zero that would know Jim Rutz.
Yes. You know, and this story reminds me, I just watched a documentary on Netflix about a photographer, a fashion photographer for... I think it was the New Yorker, Bill Cunningham. So this documentary is Bill Cunningham, New York is the name of the documentary. You're into art and craft. So I think you would enjoy this movie, but there is a scene where they were showing Bill Cunningham had all this access in the fashion world. I mean, any fashion designer knew him by first name. He had total access. He was this quirky old guy that rode around Manhattan on a bicycle. With a camera strapped around his neck, took pictures of people everywhere, fashion everywhere. And at one point in the movie, because everybody assumed he was enormously rich, that he was very wealthy, because he knew everybody who was anybody, and they showed his apartment. This guy lived in this tiny apartment that was completely packed with boxes and boxes of photographs and magazine articles. And he literally, his bed... was a mattress laid on a pallet of boxes of photos.
Amazing. Amazing.
And it was just an incredible insight into the dedication of an artist to their craft. And I think Jim
exactly
was like
what
that.
I was going to say. And that's a great lesson for the listeners today. You know that, you know, like anything else, you know, being a great copywriter, I mean, part of it is showing you're hungry. And, you know, I don't know if people believe in, you know, the 10,000 hours to mastery that Gladwell talks about, but I don't know of any copywriter that can just sort of take it up as a hobby and be great.
There are things that are true whether you believe in them or not. So you can poo-poo the 10,000 hours thing, but the guy who put in 10,000 hours will always kick your rear end.
Pretty much.
So how do you have this talent, this knack, this thing you've done over the years of finding these great copywriters and letting them do their thing. How do you know – great copy when you see it?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if I know great, well, a couple of things. I think the first thing is I have to know a great copywriter when I see him. So, you know, I did write a blog post recently. It's like, you may not know it when you see it. And so you have to ask a lot of questions of the copywriters before you hire them. And so a lot of that has to do with some of the stuff we're talking about today. You know, what have they read? Do they have swipe files? Who do they emulate? Who do they look up to? You know, how much do they read, both fiction and nonfiction? That was something that was a big aha moment as someone who doesn't really read. I was an English major in college, so I got out of college. I was done reading fiction. So
yeah, they drummed that out of you.
Yeah, I was done with that. But I found out all the great copywriters read everything. I mean, Eugene Schwartz read everything. So well read. But I think, you know, knowing good copy before, I mean, I was always pretty bad at predicting winners for the most part. Like I would, you know, you give me two packages from a writer. I would usually pick the loser of the two. But that doesn't mean that I didn't want to mail them both because I knew they both had potential. And usually it was about the headlines. It was about, you know, Marty used to have a phrase, Marty Edelston, who was my mentor, who founded Boardroom, used to say, you know, does it make me vibrate? And so I'm not saying physical, it could be physical. only my phone in my pocket makes me vibrate. But I think that when I'm reading copy, you know, how engaged am I? I mean, I do try to put myself in the place of the prospect, which was hard because Boardroom, we always had a 50 plus audience. And for a good chunk of my time at Boardroom, I wasn't 50, but I tried to really understand, you know, what they were talking about. Were they really hot buttons for what they were doing, reading, listening to? I also think that, you know, running the copy through people in that demographic is really, really important. And so I would not just trust my own judgment. Now, I am not, you know, I'm not Mark Ford or Bill Bonner at Agora, who I think could read a package and know whether to mail it or not mail it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't mail and I paid the kill fee on because I knew it would never work. But I was always of the opinion that if the writer did that much work and I was stupid enough to hire them, I got to put it in the mail and find out. But there are other people that I think have much, you know, tighter judgment than I do and wouldn't even put it in the mail. But I think it's really about, you know, and again, it sounds way too broad to just say it's got to, how engaging it's got to be, but it really has to follow. It really has to, you know, and I think the design, you know, I never like to judge the copy before it gets designed either. Mm-hmm. I really want to see how it looks in the design. I have a sense that the copy feels good, but I remember reading manuscripts over the years that I thought were pretty mediocre. And then once it got in the hands of a top-notch designer and was put into one of our elaborate formats at Boardroom. This is direct mail, but even if it was HTML, you know, how it was formatted, how the sidebars looked, where the headlines were placed, the typeface and the fonts that were used made a huge, huge difference. So I guess one of the things I would say is don't judge until you see the whole thing laid out with the expert designer as well.
Okay. So let me dial this in a little more. Let me bring this down to the runway level.
Okay.
Let's say I'm a small business, medium business person. I've got an electronics company. I sell radios and gizmos and things like that. And I want to find a copywriter I figured out that the solution to my problem with advertising is that I don't have good creative. I've got a good list. And I got great products. I just don't seem to be able to make the connection and getting people interested in what I have. So how do I, this mythical small business person who doesn't know all the stuff that Brian Kurtz knows, how do I find somebody to write copy for me?
Yeah, it's a tough one. There are places, you know, you got AWAI, which is, you know, American Writers Artists, but that runs the gamut from, you know, newbie beginner to seasoned writer. You know, where Kevin's going with Copy Chief is a good place. So those are like a couple of resource places. But, you know, if I'm in a category, I'm trying, what I would probably want to do is I'd want to do some legwork. I don't want to be half-assed about it. And so if you're a really, you know, good entrepreneur who is really dedicated to this category, hopefully you've studied the competition. You are always looking at ads for products that are competitive to yours, you know, seeing what you like, what you don't like, what seems to be, you know, seeing it over and over again, getting on a lot of lists, whether it's direct mail, email lists, where those people advertise. And, you know, because the first, that's the easy step, finding stuff that you think is really good. They could know what's good because they know that category better than I do. So they would probably be able to tell something that made them vibrate based on how a product or service is being sold that's similar to their product or service. Now, finding out who wrote that ad or who wrote that promotion, that's the tough part. And I don't know unless you, you know, I guess you can go to, you know, people like us, you know, I mean, I'm somebody who could make a few phone calls, you know, finding a good marketing consultant or someone in the space, so to speak, who may not be the writer, but might be able to know the company and find out the writer. I mean, I used to do that all the time, even, you know, being immersed in the business. I'd see a mailing piece that I loved and I'd be like on a quest to find out who wrote it. So yeah. I just don't know how that translates to the entrepreneur that you described who's not connected, not involved, but the principle is still the same, isn't it? Let's find stuff I like that looks like it's working, and by working meaning you're seeing it over and over again, and then how do I go find out the author of that?
Well, exactly. And I, you know what I think you described just now is something that Tony Robbins talks about. He in his seminars he asks people who in here, well, if you've ever seen his TED Talk, he says to the audience, which Al Gore is in the audience, so he it's pretty gutsy for him to say what he said. He said, "Who in here has ever failed at anything?"
Right.
And, you know, like nobody's raising their hands. And Tony's like, "Okay, come on. Whoever's not raising your hand lies about other things too. So who has ever failed at anything?" And he starts asking questions about, he's like, "Well, why did you fail?" And so people begin shouting out different answers. And a voice comes out of the darkness and says, "I didn't have enough Supreme Court justices on my side." And it's Al Gore. And right. It's a very funny moment. And so Tony goes on to say, well, what everybody just named is resources. And what you're missing is not resources, it's resourcefulness. Mm. And you just described that in action, which is, well, I found a good ad. It works because they've been running it forever. So like the Staur ads, I don't know if you ever see those Staur, like the watches and jewelry, they run those things like crazy. So they're obviously working. So it just depends on how hungry you are to know who wrote that. How much of a detective can I be? Can I call the place? Can I get a connection to somebody who knows somebody there? Can I track that down? But I think I want to turn this around now because I think there's a real opportunity here for copywriters who are looking for what Jay Abraham calls a setup, a company that is positioned to win. They just don't have the right creative. Mm. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely true that, you know, look, I think any copywriter who's not on every list they can be on to see what's in the marketplace, both big and small, is missing opportunities left and right. And I love the, you know, just thinking of like what I would do if I didn't know anybody and I saw an ad in Parade magazine that was similar to what I would want to do. Like, what would I do to be resourceful? And I was just thinking about it while you were saying that. I'm like, well, maybe I'd like call the, I mean, I assume in Parade, there's probably a masthead, right? And there's a publisher and, or there's an editorial director. And I would like be totally transparent. I call the editorial director and say, you know, I have this small little business. I love this ad. Do you have a contact at this company or whatever? I mean, you may not get there, but you're not going to get there saying I'll never get there and throw Parade out that day, right?
Exactly. So
reversing the other way is kind of really interesting too. I think copywriters should always be looking for, you know, the next. You can't choose your mentor. I have a. I'm going to write a blog post this week that's like, you know, you don't choose your mentors. Your mentors choose you. And I think that, you know, I use that story about Gene Schwartz about helping him with his list work. He became my mentor for life. And I didn't plan it that way, but it worked out. Did the same thing with Dick Benson, the great direct mail consultant. And now with this Jim Rutz project, it's come full circle. Do you know that after I did the Copywriter Closest to God, I did a post later on where I either repeated it or I put a PS. I forget what I did, but it was like a very, like a throwaway line. You know, wouldn't it be great if someday, you know, I could take all these works of Jim Rutz and get them into a product that people could digest for generations. And lo and behold, Jim's sister just sent me two boxes of everything he owned. And I said, and then I said, someday maybe I'll get to it. Don't you know that three copywriters from my list wrote me a letter, an email, and said, hey, Brian, when you're working on that, I want in. They weren't looking for money. They wanted in because they wanted to be part of my world, right?
Yeah.
So when I decided to finally go to my storage facility, get the boxes out, I set up a Skype call. It was only a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I sat on it for about 10 months and I apologized to Jim's sister. I was launching a new business. I couldn't deal with it. So this is what my blog post is about. So basically these three guys who came out of the woodwork, I got them on a Skype call. I said, you guys in on this project? And, you know, a couple of things. First of all, if this is a good product and we end up, you know, getting a $1,000 product out of it, I don't care about the money. I was going to give it all to charity anyway, or give it to some church in Jim's name. But you know what? If I split the money up among Jim's sister and these three copywriters, these are young, hungry copywriters who haven't established themselves in a big way yet. For them to make an extra 10 or 15,000 bucks on a project like this, plus they get to be author. I'll put them in as the authors of the Lost Files of Jim Rutz product. They'll help me do the interviews because we're going to interview greats who knew him, blah, 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 all of that. And so I realized that, you know, they came to me. And the other piece, so they're going to be part of this product. They may get some money out of it. Maybe not. They're not looking for money. I hate to say this because it sounds arrogant, but I have to say it because people always ask me, Brian, will you be my mentor? And I said, it doesn't work that way. Like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
But you know what? Do you think these three guys, if they want me as their mentor, will I be their mentor? You bet. I don't know what I can teach them or what I can tell them, but if they want me for something, they're in my life now and they raised their hand and said, Brian, I want to be part of the Jim Rutz project.
Yeah. And that's such a great point because you don't get mentors by sending an email and saying out of the blue, hey, Brian, will you be my mentor? Because you're asking them to give up a huge portion of their life to help you out for free. You're basically saying, I have a job for you. Would you be willing to do it for free? Because I'm sure you don't have enough to do already. But these guys all stepped up and said, Brian, let me add value to your life. Let me do something to help you. And that's a whole different dynamic. And just FYI, because somebody listening will think, oh, that's the trick. No, it doesn't work. It's not a trick. It has to be the real thing.
It's got to be the real deal. You have to go at it with no expectation of a return.
Yeah.
So those three copywriters may get squat from me in terms of money. I mean, I'll be nice to them because I can't help being nice to them. But, you know, I'm not going to be an idiot. I'm not going to be a jerk. But they may not make money. Stu McLaren did a post recently about this concept, too. He did a Facebook, our buddy Stu. And he said something to this effect. I actually commented on it about your mentors choose you. Because he was talking about being of service to whoever you're being of service to. Now, the issue is, you just said, you can't, it's got to be 100-0. It's got to be, you know, I'm going to be of service to you. If something happens later on, so be it, but no expectation. And actually, you always do better when you go in without expectation.
Yeah. And I don't know, I think, I don't want to get too spooky, but I think it's a spiritual principle, whatever your beliefs are. I just think that there's something that's operating there that when you go in with that no expectation, I'm just here to contribute, that it does come back to you. And it may not be through that person.
Exactly.
I believe it's going to come back to you, though, in some other way. And I just want to dig a little bit at this concept of opportunity for copywriters, because I used to tell people, up-and-coming copywriters, I used to tell them, don't write for spec because you're just getting ripped off. And I've since changed my advice on that, but I think you got to be really careful. But if you find the right company, and I just want to see what you think about this. If you find the right company and you study them and you look at their product and you look at their customer service and you buy from them and you do some research and you believe that they have something real going and their ads are crap and you think to yourself, I can help them. I can make a huge difference to this company's life. My suggestion would be create something for them and don't ask them, don't go in and try to make some kind of deal. Just go to them and say, look, this is what I do. And I love you guys. I love your product. I love your stuff. I did this for you. And I'm asking nothing. I'm just saying, try this out and let me know if it works. And if it does, that's great. I have no expectation. I think that could be a marvelous way to possibly form a partnership with a company where everybody wins in a big way.
Yeah, I think in the ideal conditions, that could be a really powerful thing. I've always also said to, and this is from the client side, because I was always on the client side, I never like to have a writer work on spec. And the reason there was that, first of all, if they're willing to work on spec, while it looks good on the one hand, you know, don't pay me until it works kind of thing, it actually usually works the other way. It's that they're usually not good enough, and they know that that's the only way they're going to get a chance. And I also don't like not paying somebody for their time, because so that's just the integrity issue for me as well. So I never recommended to clients that when a copywriter comes to them and says, I'll write this for free, you mail it, and you only pay me if it works. Not crazy about that. You kind of turned it on its ear a little bit, where it was the writer that went looking for the ideal client. This is like going out and looking for your avatar.
Yes.
Looking for the area that you, so this goes back to my passion argument and your argument about, you know, what you talked about, your photographer and Jim Rutz's, you know, swipe files as furniture. If you're passionate about writing, I'll make it up, I'm writing for the chiropractic or pain management market, go out and find someone in that category. Then you do what you do. You send them. They didn't give you an assignment on spec, but you make sure you've got the person. You send it to them, and then the cover letter on that is, look, I did this on my own time, my own dime. I'm not expecting anything. However, this what you do, as you said, what you do. I love what you do, but I also love this because it's my passion category. It's the one category that I want to write for the most, and I've got some chops as a copywriter already. But this is the category, and I think that this could help you. Mail it, let me know how it does, and then you kind of keep it no expectation. But if it does work, you know, give me a call and maybe we can do something together. Don't even talk about money. That turns the spec thing on its ear a little bit, so I'm cool with that. I just don't like the straight. I got to tell you, almost every copywriter who's ever come to me in my 30 years who said, I'll do this for you for free and you'll pay me only if it works, none of them were very good.
Well, and in that
there
case,
there were a couple that I thought were okay. And on those, I said, you know what? I'll go one better. I'm going to pay you, you know, $7,500, $5,000. Let's see how it does. And go ahead and go to work. Cause I just didn't want to, you know, and they weren't royalty. So it wasn't high risk on my part, but I saw enough of the talent there. But more times than not, it was either I'm going to pay for, if you're going to spend that much time and I think you're good enough, why shouldn't I pay you?
Good point. Well, I think this is a good place for us to talk a little, if you can, about this event that you and Kevin are going to be doing. What can you tell us about that?
You know, it's still very much in the planning stages, but the concept would be, we thought maybe it would be workshop, but I think what I want to do is I want to bring 150 to 200 people to St. Petersburg, Florida, because that's where Kevin lives, and I told him I would do it there. Plus, it's going to be in February, so why would I want to be in New York in February, right?
That's a very generous act on your part.
Yeah, very generous act on my part. So what I'd love to do, and I've got some names in mind, I probably shouldn't rattle them off yet, but I want to bring some of the best not just copywriters, but people who really understand, you know, how to create a persona online, you know, the people that you and I would both look up to and say, wow, that's somebody that if they hired a copywriter in-house, it would have to be in-house and someone who could write in their voice, because they're not looking for the hired gun. They're looking for somebody to work with them closely because their voice is so important and the congruence of their voice to their audience is paramount. So those would be my Shamu I call them the Shamu speakers. Joe Polish used to say, when you're doing a live event, get a Shamu, and then all the other speakers will fall into place. So when I did my Titans event, I got Dan Kennedy, and then I got other Shamus. It so happened I got Gary Bensavenga, I got Jay Abraham, I got Joe Sugarman.
You had a tank full of Shamus.
I know, but I went for one first. You got to get the one. And Kennedy was the one I chose as my work first because he had the biggest following, and I knew he had a big list and all of that. And Kennedy doesn't usually speak for other people. So knowing that I got Kennedy to speak for me would be a big deal. So anyway, I've got a couple of Shamus in mind who are not your typical speakers at these events. And then I want to make sure, and then I can fill in with all the other Shamus, people that we've mentioned on this call that, and all of that. But then the other piece I want to do is I want to have some of the best clients who hire copywriters come to the event, get on stage, talk about what they look for. And I don't want to turn the thing into speed dating, but it's going to be, I want to take this to another level. I got to make the fee to get into this event. It can't be, you know, it's got to be a decent amount of money. You know, it can't be a few hundred dollars. It's going to have to be, you know, a few thousand to get to this event. I'll have a VIP program, which will be like a third day where people will pay maybe $5,000. But at that, we're going to really keep some of the speakers at there. And those will be for the people that really want to invest in themselves and all of that. So we've got there's a lot of devil in the details still. But right now I have my requests out to my Shamus. We have a hotel, we have dates end of February. Right now though, it's sort of the next step after Kevin and I did a podcast, we did a live hangout on this subject. And we actually have a working title, which you might enjoy. It's called Creative Control. Which, you know, kind of a play on words of the control and all that.
Yeah.
But I also, the subtitle would be, and again, this goes back to, remember when I said one of the things I always want a copywriter to understand is lists and universe and marketplace. So basically it's creative control, the art, which is the creative, and science of copywriting and marketing. So it's basically bringing both teams together. You know, AWAI does wonderful boot camps. I'm speaking at their boot camp in October. I love the folks at AWAI. But when I speak there, I'm one of the very few marketers who mm-hmm. speak. Even Dan Kennedy, who's a great marketer, comes there to speak more as a copywriter.
Mm-hmm.
I go there and speak as a marketer, and I love having that role at AWAI, sort of having the role of being kind of the marketing guy who knows about copywriters or something like that. And this, so it's a nice positioning for me, and I think it's good. But I think we could do a whole event around that.
This event, I'm getting the sense that this event is going to be another Bensavenga 100 Titans level event. It's going to be one of those events that if people miss it, they're going to look back and say, oh, dang, I should not have missed that.
I'm not there yet on it. I love that you said that because I feel more confident that you said that. But I'm playing. I'm playing a little. Not just humble. I gotta be careful because I'm excited about it, but it's not there yet. So
I get it. But I know you and I know the level that you play the game at, and I just feel like it's going to be one of those events. So I'm really happy you're doing it. I'm super excited.
I think I offered you a Shamu spot at some point. So
you did. And just hearing you describe it, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, how can I not go to this?
Well, you're definitely going to be there. The question is if you want to speak.
History repeating itself. This happened to me once before with good results. I mean, you dragged me across country to go to Titans, and I'm so glad you did that.
I was so happy you were there.
So Brian, we could talk for hours, and I told you this was going to be freeform, and it was, and it was fantastic. You are brilliant. I truly respect you and look to you as a mentor and a friend. And, I encourage people to follow what you're doing to get your book, The Advertising Solution.
Yeah, there is a pre-order page on Amazon for it, I think, but it's not out until October or September or something. I don't know.
And then your blog, where can people find you and get on your list?
Yeah, so if they go to briankurtz.me, www.briankurtz.me. I was too much of a grandpa to get .com. It was already taken. And they go on there. There's an interview there. It's actually a fun interview. It's one that I did. It's how to get a database of 9 million names without the internet.
Hello.
It's pretty cool. And then I have a lot of free content. It's a very modest site. But then I blog, you know, every week, every other week on all sorts of stuff, like talking about Gene Schwartz and how he exchanged copy for names, and writing about Jim Rutz, and then writing about things like, you know, the fact that I umpire baseball, and that I equate that to being a great customer service and fulfillment person in direct marketing, and how important that part of it is to all of us in marketing.
It's a brilliant blog. And so we'll link to all this stuff, along with this interview, and we'll have a link to the Titans DVDs so people can get those, which they should. All the other stuff you're
doing. I don't have a lot in stock. I think it's TitansDVDs.com. I think I have maybe 30 sets left. I don't know if I'll go back and reprint everything.
Maybe we'll clean you out. Well, Brian, thank you again.
Oh, you're very welcome. And, good luck with everything. And I respect you. And I think I said, when you asked me to do this, I think I said you had me at, hello, Brian, or whatever.
Something like that. Yeah.
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 And also I hope that this was tangible. I mean, I guess some people are going to go on these calls and be a little more tangible. Maybe this was a little more strategic, but I don't know.
This was perfect. This was exactly what I was hoping for from you.
Okay, good.
I know people are going to love it. They're going to eat it up. So, just thank you so much. And, we will be talking to you soon.
Thank you.